Let's go around the NFL with Fred Landry and Lopez. You are in the loop on Houston's sports leader, Sports Radio 610.
First down Indy from the Colts 36. Play action. Luck throwing deep downfield. Wants Hilton, and he's got him inside the 10. Dragged out at the 5 by Justin Reed.
That's the one.
Yeah, that's it.
All right, real quick, that's the play. We'll have we're gonna have our boy Stanford Route break that down here in just a second. Then Jadeveon Clowney has finally spoken. First time we've heard from him since the ill-fated offsides move. Real quick, before we get into you, when did they? And somebody tweeted this out, and I saw it on some folks chiming in on this. I thought you could jump across the line as long as you didn't hit anybody, and then you could get back. I thought that was the old...
Henry probably can give you a better synopsis on that. I always was under the impression that if they go and they jump offsides and an offensive lineman moves, then they're basically drawing the foul or they're drawing the penalty. But Henry probably can describe that better than me.
You can, if you in the neutral zone and they jump offsides, it's on you because you drew them to
but
jump.
But if you just accidentally just like run and they don't move,
yeah, if
you
you're flinching and you're not over the in the neutral zone, Henry Thomas zone, if you're not in there, then you know right away.
You're good.
Now, back in the day, you'll remember this, Henry, defenses, before that rule came into about that rule was relatively recent, They used to try to make the offense jump.
It was called back set. That was another one of Henry's nights.
And earlier in that game, wasn't there a play where one of the Texans players jumped off sides? I think it may have been Watt. And the offensive lineman tried to go ahead and draw
he
it.
He acted like he waited too long.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. He waited about 2 split seconds. Okay. And then it hit.
And the referee was like, come on now.
And I think it was a rookie, though.
Okay, good to know. Good to know. All right, so Stanford Rout, back to your wheelhouse.
Yes.
The T.Y. Hilton play, and again, I threw it out to you. Why is it that if we knew that T.Y. Hilton was a force to be reckoned with, is he just that good?
I think that he's fast. That's number one.
True.
Number two, he understands zone cover, so he knows how to find the soft spot within the zone. He's a great route runner, but more importantly, he has a quarterback that, A, has a strong arm, B, believes in his arm, and C, is very confident and will put the ball into tight windows because he's trusting T.Y. to come down with it.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's what Gerard was saying yesterday. He says a couple of those throws were like he placed it, you know, in his hands.
Oh, yeah. He's dropping it in the bucket pretty much every time.
How frustrating is it as a cornerback when you're doing everything? Because y'all are already – I mean, that's arguable. I think cornerbacks is one of the most difficult positions to play in sports.
Oh, no doubt about it.
When a play is made like that and you're in perfect position, how frustrating is it when there's nothing you can do but a guy just puts the ball in a spot that just only his receiver can get to?
It's very frustrating, but at the same time, you got to have short memory because they're going to make plays too. They get paid every Tuesday just like you do, and you understand that, hey, he made a play. It wasn't necessarily that I got beat on the play or I was in bad coverage. The quarterback just made a great throw, and you know as a DB, there is no coverage that is good enough to beat a perfect throw.
Just tip your cap.
Yeah, you just tip your cap, and then you just make sure that the next time when he comes back at you, you make sure that you make him pay next time.
All right, let's get into the hot route, as we call it, the X's and O's. Mm-hmm. You and I were texting over the weekend after the game, and you said, was there a particular play? Not really, but that 60-yarder that Landry just played was kind of emblematic of what T.Y. was doing. What was he doing from a football X's and O's perspective? What were they doing that got him open like that and consistently?
Oh, that was just simple. 12 personnel. You got 2 tight ends. You got 1 back in the backfield. You got 2 receivers split up top. And all it was just max pro. It was just a 2-man pass route. That's it. Just 2 receivers going down the field. The first receiver just broke out to the sideline, got 5 yards up the field, broke to the sideline. And then T.Y. Hilton goes on what you call a 7 pump, where he runs up the field about 15 to 20 yards, fakes like he's going toward the sideline on a 7 cut, and then waits to the DB, Justin Reed, to turn his hips and then flips it back, going toward the post, toward the middle part of the field. It looked like to me like the Texans were in cover 2. Mm-hmm. And if Honey Badger, if he gets back deeper and doesn't bite up on the play action fake, that's from what I'm seeing.
Right.
I'm saying that that's a definite, but that's what I'm seeing. If he stays back, then Justin Reed doesn't have as much stress on him when T.Y. Hilton goes back toward the middle of the
field. Trying to play catch up.
And then Tyrann Mathieu is picking the ball off right there.
But he kind of hesitated or came up or whatever.
And a lot of that had to do with the play action fake because Indianapolis was running the ball a good amount on first downs. Because I believe that was the first play of that drive.
I think it was.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it was.
Let me ask you something real quick. And it's kind of off the beaten path, but my last show, so I don't care.
Shoot.
You've got 2 guys and we've been throwing this out. Uh-huh. Texans are going to have about $74 million in cap space.
Okay.
Right? Justin Reed, am I wrong in saying that this dude's going to be a Pro Bowler for the next 7-8 years?
I don't think that that's a false statement for
okay.
you to say that. No.
All right. I mean, this dude looks like the real deal, right?
Yes.
I mean, this guy's only going
to
get better.
He went to Stanford University. Anything with the name Stanford on it, you know it's going to be success. Come on.
Fair point. Fair point. So let me ask you this. You've got a decision to make if you're Brian Gain. You've got Tyrann Mathieu, all right, who's going to be an unrestricted free agent.
Yes.
And then you've got Kareem Jackson, who's going to be an unrestricted free agent. Kareem's going to be 31. Mm-hmm. When the season starts in 2019, but has had a phenomenal year this year. Tyrann's going to be 27. All right. If you're Brian Gain, do you sign one or both of those guys, depending upon what kind of money they're going to be wanting? And put your agent hat on. What kind of money do you think they're going to be looking for?
I think that both of them are going to be looking for starter money. I think
okay.
that.
Well, Tyrann, right. Absolutely.
I think,
right?
yeah. Tyrann Mathieu, he's going to be probably looking for something in the top five safeties in the league category. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I can just tell you that right now.
Would you
now,
give him Eric Berry type dollars?
Would I give him Eric Berry type
what,
of dollars?
What you want and what Man. You get are two totally different things.
Eric Berry's
making about $13
million. Yes. I don't like to count the next man's money, but because you're asking
but
me
you're
to
in
put
the media
my
now,
GM.
So you're
because you're asking
now.
Me to put my GM hat on, would I pay him Eric Berry type of money?
No, he's going to want that, but are you going to give it to him?
Mm.
Come on now. You can, that tells me no.
I can't say that I would.
Assistant
but
GM. No.
I definitely would make him one of the higher paid safeties. But because, and the reason why is because so much of the Texans' success is predicated on the front seven. That's really what it's mostly about
yeah,
within that defense.
Exactly.
And I'm not saying that the guys in the back end are scrubs by no stretch of the imagination, but the way that it's set up with Rack. It is set up predicated on the front seven
getting
and the
pressure.
Pass rush.
Exactly.
So if I'm Brian Gain and I'm trying to save money because I know that I'm going to have to pay Jadeveon Clowney very soon, I know that. I'm not going to be willing to break the bank on guys in the secondary because I don't necessarily need that.
Really?
That's why.
Okay, okay.
Not because
with
they're
this
not
team,
good.
Because they're so good up front.
Yes, because that's how Rack's defenses have always been predicated. It's
yeah.
all about the front seven. If the front seven is getting the pass rush and they're getting pressure on the quarterback, the ball's coming out quicker.
Yeah.
It's not coming out as accurately as can be. You got J.J. Watt, Merciless, Clowney up there tipping passes. So then that's when all of a sudden the DBs, they start getting picks to the house. They start getting more plays on the ball. Look at 2011, 2012. Those are J.J.'s best years, right?
Mm-hmm.
Went to
yes,
the Pro Bowl.
Right.
Was a starter in 2012. One of my favorite players.
Mm-hmm.
J.J. Watt, balling, getting pressure on the quarterback. Ball comes out quicker.
Yeah, and you know what? I'm totally agreeing. But I think with this, the linebackers crew, they haven't been as effective as I thought, as I would like them to be.
Yeah.
Like in the last game, they never got enough depth
yeah.
to keep that little dink and dump off.
I agree.
And early in the game, they weren't really running the ball so much to lock you into that.
Yeah.
So why weren't we getting
they
enough
They only had
depth?
50 yards rushing.
But this is why. This is why. So let's go ahead and just go quickly down this 9-game win streak.
Mm-hmm. Do it.
It started with the Colts.
Yeah.
Cowboys.
Okay.
Bills.
Well, the Colts, T.Y. was out the second half.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And they were down 28-10 and came back.
And a coaching blunder.
And
if
it wasn't
blunder.
For Frank Reich actually trying to win the game, which
yes.
he should be doing.
Exactly.
And what maybe
See,
a minute to go
quick.
In overtime, all of a sudden, that game winds up being a tie.
See, let me ask you guys this, because the three of us have gone back and forth on this. I think it was a great idea for him to go for it on 4th-and-4. I get it. They didn't make it. But and we can always play the what if game. Yes, they'd be, you know, they'd be 6-5-1. But in some ways, I feel like that galvanized that team.
I feel like it did too.
You know what I'm mm-hmm. saying? Because let's not forget, this team won 5 out of their next 7 games.
That
result
right.
of that.
That type of call by the head coach, I can tell you, that is nothing more than a hindsight type of moment. Because
mm-hmm.
if he makes the call and it works,
you're a genius.
Exactly, you're a genius. If you don't, all of a sudden, hey man, that was a stupid call.
Right.
I can't believe he did that. But you think about it. What do you play the game to do? To win, right?
When Herm Edwards
told you. And that's what the play.
So now, it's just a very particular situation where if you go for it and you don't make it,
right.
you now give the offense the ball near midfield.
Right.
All they got to do is throw a dig route to DeAndre Hopkins, and they're in field goal range, and they can go ahead and win the game late in overtime. So it's one of those situations. You're stuck between a rock and a hard place.
But and it's like you said, galvanizing the team. It makes your players say, they have the confidence in us.
Yeah.
It's like you said, they went on a roll where
mm-hmm.
The quarterback never touched the ground. So, you know,
but
nobody can barely get to Luck.
I also think it says a lot about how much this team, that team likes their coach. Yeah. I think they rallied behind the criticism that was levied on him. But anyway, let's go through. I know where you're going with this.
The 9-game win streak start off with the Colts. Then it's the Cowboys.
Another one
in overtime. You got Bills, Jaguars, Dolphins, Broncos, Redskins, Titans, Browns, and it ends with the Colts. Now, of all those teams, what is the one thing that the Colts have but all those other teams don't have?
Quarterback.
And none of those teams, exactly. They are missing a burner, a number one receiver, or a competent quarterback.
Well, okay, so you're not throwing Jarvis Landry in the mix as a number one receiver?
Jarvis Landry is a slot guy.
Yeah.
And who's their quarterback?
Baker.
Baker
Mayfield. So he's not there yet.
How many interceptions did he throw against the Houston Texans?
The Texans confused him like hell in the first half. Second half, he actually had 300 yards,
because he's a rookie.
Yeah, exactly.
But what is the one thing the Colts have? The Colts have
a veteran QB.
They have a veteran QB, a competent quarterback, and they have a receiver that is top-notch that can get open.
Yeah.
That is the one
and
thing
a good tight end.
That is the one thing in this 9-game win streak, minus the one that started against the Colts in overtime. Yeah. That's the one thing that none of these teams have had, because come on now, the Denver Broncos, Case Keenum, we now see how limited he is now, ever since he left Minnesota. We have the Miami Dolphins. We have Brock Osweiler. Come on. Jacksonville Jaguars.
Come on.
Blake Bortles.
Come on.
Dak Prescott. Come on. Without Amari Cooper.
Without Amari Cooper.
We got Buffalo Bills. They brought in Nathan Peterman. And sure enough, he threw his two interceptions.
Yeah, he did.
That he always
what do you like to say?
Throw.
He'll throw it right to you.
So the thing is that the Texans went against a team that has a quarterback and they have a receiving core, or should I say a top-notch receiver.
Yeah.
And that's been their Achilles heel to me. And that's where when you see within the 9-game win streak, that's the one thing that they have not gone against. But
smoke and mirrors, is that what you're telling me right now?
I wouldn't say smoke and mirrors. I would say that the 9-game win streak was more 6-3, 7-2.
Yeah.
That's to me because of what they
did. Just didn't play good talent.
Exactly. So when you factor in, their remaining schedule is what? The Jets, I believe the Eagles, and then the Jaguars. They can win all three of those games.
Yeah. Not to mention Carson Wentz is out.
Exactly. And then wind up going 12-4. But where this team is trying to go in the playoffs,
Kansas City, Mahomes,
Pittsburgh, New England.
Roethlisberger.
So you're going to have to get ready.
Baltimore's going to give them fits.
Them too. So you got to factor in where we're trying to go, what we have to get ready for. And I think that's always been their Achilles heel, is going against a team that has a competent quarterback that makes throws in tight windows, receivers that know how to get open and understand passing routes, understand the route tree, understand zone defense, and can beat man coverage. That's what I think their Achilles heel is. But I feel like if they shore up a few things, they can do better against those types of teams.
All right, I got a question for you when we come back. We're going to the locker room, and I got a question for you as it pertains to this game on Saturday and how that projects into the playoffs. Plus, we're going to hear from our boy Jadeveon Clowney, who speaks finally after the blunder on Sunday afternoon.